From LA to the San Francisco Bay, this is the Chain Crew Podcast. We are the voice of California youth football powered by Atavis, educating coaches to teach safe tackling technique. Visit cayfa.org to find out more.
Welcome to another Chain Crew Podcast. We are the voice of California youth football. Steve Famigliano, once again, along with the infamous one, Ron White. Ron, what's happening today?
Hey, how you doing, Steve?
We're doing good. How's football season going for you there at Golden Empire in the Bakersfield area? Everything smooth, running smoothly for you?
Oh, it's controlled chaos, right? But it's fun going into week six. We're about the halfway point, but some really great football going on. The kids are having a good time. That's the most important thing.
You know, in the last time we were on the Chain Crew, we were talking about all the heat that we've been having here in Southern California. So I know we're kind of past that now. So I know that's probably one of the concerns that you don't have anymore is as we get into October now.
Oh, I'm looking forward to October, right? We're going to get away from triple digits. It's starting to feel and smell like football, if you know what I mean.
Right. Real quick, though, before we bring our guest in, what does football smell like?
The grass, the dew, the morning, right? It has that football feel to it. It's almost tangible, like you can feel it and taste it. Who knows, Steve? It might be sensory deprivation. I've been doing this for 3 decades, so that's just what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's funny, you say you've been doing this for 3 decades. The guest that we're bringing on now, who we've been waiting to get on for quite some time now, he's been around football for a very long time and has a lot of experience with this sport also. Joining us right now is Chris Fore. Chris is a CAYFA board member. He's the president of the California Coaches Association. He's also a high school administrator, a coach, a dad, a husband. Chris, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited. Excited to finally spend some time here on the Chain Crew Podcast.
I got to ask you, Chris, how did you become a San Diego? Oh, see, I did it myself. They're now LA Chargers. How did you first become a San Diego Charger fan, now LA Charger fan, and a Miami Dolphin fan? I think I know the answer, but I want to hear this because you were on Twitter yesterday posting a lot of things after the Chargers lost. And of course, the Dolphins are having a horrible season.
You know what? Thank you for those memories of yesterday. I appreciate that very kindly. So, you know, I was born and raised down in San Diego County, down in Fallbrook. And so, you know, I grew up as a San Diego boy, and that's the first team I ever heard of was the Chargers. My dad was a huge Charger fan, having grown up there in Fallbrook himself. So I started cheering on for the Chargers, and then there was a game. You know, a lot of times kids, you want to be contrary to your parents. And so I think I was 6 or 7 years old. Dan Marino was around. It was his rookie year, and they threw up a ton of points against the Chargers and beat the Dolphins. That is, they beat the Chargers. And I started going, like, in the second half, you know, I started going, Dad, I'm a Dolphin fan now. You know, I'm 6 or 7 years old, but I started cheering against the Chargers, and that was ticking him off. And he was kind of playing with me like, you like the Dolphins, you're out of my house, boy, you know, that type of stuff. So I just kind of played on it. And then they had these really cool colors, orange and, you know, turquoise and orange. And so I kind of started liking them for their colors and because my dad was a Charger fan. So I kind of started cheering for both teams. And that's how it all started.
You know, that's a very funny story because you wouldn't think as a child that's a good way to get back at your parents, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Find out who your dad's favorite NFL team is and then pick the opposing team and try and razz them up a little bit. No, that's great stuff. I mean, we could do a whole podcast on the NFL season and maybe we'll do that one time for sure.
Let's not. I'll tell you right now, Steve, I just had it, you know, on Facebook, your memories comes up on there, you know, and I looked at it this morning, you know, Facebook memories, and it was of 2 years ago. Phillip Rivers throwing a pick at the end of the game in the end zone. And I'm like, gosh, dang, was this yesterday or 2 years ago? Yeah. So, and the Dolphins are not going to win a game this year.
And listen, I have to say this, right? I appreciate the whole dad story, right? Because that's similar in my household. But Chris, you're a pretty smart guy. You had 32 choices.
I know.
And those were the two. I just want to say that with all transparency.
It's awful.
Wait a minute now. I'm a San Diego guy. That's one thing that Chris and I have in common here. We're Padres fans and we're Charger fans. So you know what? You're kind of outnumbered, Ron.
I want to be honest with you. I did have a John Jefferson jersey as a young kid, and I did appreciate the Air Corps yell. I just couldn't do it full time. Too much misery. I couldn't do it.
Too much. You are right about that.
All right. No, that's great stuff. Great stuff. Thanks for that, Chris. So recently there was a NFHS study that just came out that a lot of people, I guess, have taken and run with it, especially the anti-football side, to basically say that, oh yeah, look, football's done. It's over with. Look at the numbers at high school. It's just 20 years. It's the lowest number ever. Can you give us your perspective on that decline in high school tackle football and kind of give us some of the trends that you're seeing, being a high school administrator that you are?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. First of all, I'm a stat geek. I'm a numbers guy. I love numbers. And you can take numbers and do a lot of different things with them. You can take statistical facts and analyze those in a lot of different ways. One of the first, so yeah, 20 years, last 20 years, lowest high school numbers we've ever seen at the high school level last school year, okay? Because obviously they're 1 year behind. We don't know what this year's numbers are. So everybody freaked out. The anti-football crowd gave those numbers a standing ovation. Few things about those numbers to point out as you dive into them. And there's no doubt, I'm not saying there's an issue with high school football participation numbers. First thing to acknowledge, 1,000%, if that's possible, there 100% is an issue with high school football participation numbers. But when you get in and start looking at it, guess what? There's also a 30-year, this was the lowest high school athletic participation numbers in 30 years across the board. So less kids played any high school sports last year, the least amount since 30 years ago. So not only is football affected in their lowest numbers in 20 years, all of high school sports, the lowest total number in the last 30 years. Okay, so that's one thing to point out. It's not just football. Basketball took big hits too.
Yes, it did.
A second thing to point out is I was reviewing these in preparation for this. 168 schools nationwide added football in last school year, the 18-19 school year. There's 168 more high schools nationwide who played football. So obviously, how do those two numbers coincide? Well, obviously, the average number per team went down. But folks, we got 168 schools nationally adding football to their list of sports they offer. That's awesome. Did we see those numbers anywhere?
No.
No. Did the anti-football crowd acknowledge those numbers anywhere? No. Did state associations celebrate those numbers anywhere? No. We're not very good at that positive PR side. And of course, the media is always going to hit the worst part of it. But then, you know, Steve, when you take those numbers a bit further, and I know Ron is also, you know, I know he's a little bit of a stat nerd like myself. When you take those numbers a little further and look at California specifically and the rate of our decline, one thing that got me thinking was, well, what is the rate of teenage boys in California compared? If you just use a stat, okay, you just use a stat in a vacuum comparing it to nothing else, how do you know what that stat's really good for or done for? So I think it's important in a statistical analysis, the declining numbers we have in California specifically, how does that compare to the declining numbers of teenage boys living in California? And what a surprise. When you look at the math, 20 years ago, we had 5% more boys aged 13 to 17 in the state of California. 5% more. So you got to look at a little more than what just the media portrays and the media puts out there, if you really care. You know, for instance, I think 3 years ago, I saw this article about football is killing our kids more than any other sport. Well, that national article in a magazine or a website called Grantland was 100% false, but nobody stood up to it until I did some research. And I found out that high school baseball has a higher death participation rate than football, meaning more kids by a percentage of, according to the participation, more kids die playing high school baseball than high school football, participation wise. I bet you've never seen that. When that came out, when I produced those numbers, and those are all NFHS documented numbers, people were blown away by those numbers when I first put that study out there. Again, you got to look at numbers outside of the little vacuum and a number just standing alone.
You know, it's interesting you brought up the high school death rate of baseball. It's the same for youth baseball. The death rate for, yes, little league baseball is about the same as high school baseball, which is just, to me, it's absolutely fascinating because you're right. You do not hear about that at all. Unless you bring it up, right? I mean, you get in a conversation with somebody about football being as bad as it is and all this other stuff that gets said, and you just say, well, hey, wait a minute here. Here's this stat. Here's this stat. Here's this stat. And they look at you dumbfounded almost like, what do you mean there's more deaths in baseball?
Yeah, yeah. And what was interesting about that stat, because I reached out to the guy who wrote that story. I sent him an email directly, and I just said, hey, I'm going to let you know I'm publishing this on my website tomorrow. Now, Coach Four, you know, my website, nothing compared to Grantland, obviously. So like, he didn't have anything to worry about. But I'm like, look, I've done some research and you are 100% wrong in what you're saying. Football has not killed more kids than any other sport. It's actually baseball. And then what it, so his whole article was about the deaths happening in football. And then of course he turned my email right back on me and like said, well, football is way more dangerous than baseball is. And I said, well, then write the article about that. Not that football's killing more kids, because you're wrong. But, you know, he didn't want to address that aspect of things. It just, I'm sure that got a ton of clicks and a ton of impressions for his website.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And I'm so glad you said that, because a little bit of a numbers geek, a little bit of a nerd in this area too, is it rarely do you hear the whole story, to your point. You don't hear about generational birth rates. You don't hear about all the variable factors. But I try to go a little deeper than that, Chris. I take a look and I'm always interested in the why.
Yeah.
Why is it that if we're really seekers of truth and we want a balanced bit of information, regardless of the sport, why does it always seem to circle back and have a perpetual lock on football? So I've done some thinking, and I know it's anecdotal at best. I haven't put that kind of research in, but it's got to be tied to the visibility of the most popular sport on the planet outside of world soccer, and that's the NFL. So I look at that connection and I look at what the narrative is. And it's really frustrating because, unfortunately, from a consumer perspective, right, they only get bits and pieces of cherry-picked truth. And I think we do a disservice sometimes when, you said this earlier, we're not great about celebrating those moments. Collectively, we need to celebrate those moments and put that truth out there.
Absolutely. You're right about that. Football is the number one sport in our nation. It's all over. I mean, look, you can watch football up. You got Monday Night Football tonight. I think real soon here, you're going to have Tuesday night football with the Mac. You got Thursday night NFL, Friday night. I mean, it is all over the place. And that's what parents see. And that's what kids see. I had a mom in my office just a few weeks ago talking to me about, you know, her kid plays baseball and he's played a bunch of years of football. But her words exactly, I don't want him to die playing football. And I said, wow. Interesting you should say that. Is he playing high school baseball? Oh, yeah, he's going to. Did you know he has a greater chance of dying playing baseball than football? What? She looked at me dumbfounded, and I emailed her my research right then and there. So you're right. It's that proportionality of football being all over the place.
You know what, Chris, that's interesting. You brought up that story about the parent talking to you about this. What is the biggest concern among parents? What's the vibe you're getting from parents that are maybe pulling their kids or maybe won't have their kids play high school football?
So before I answer that, Steve, one more question about all that stats and the NFHS rate. Did you know, again, something that's not celebrated very well by our football community, participation amongst girls has doubled in 1 year? That when all those football participation decline rates came out, it's interesting when you dig into that article, the number of girls playing high school football doubled in 1 year. Imagine that. Okay. But to your point and the question you just asked, yeah, it's the whole concussion craze. It's the whole concussion craze that we've seen, you know, all over the media, I'd say about the last 5 years. There's no doubt when you track it, and I have on different charts and stuff I've put together, when you start looking at the national discussion of concussions and the decline in participation numbers at the high school level, those two things go hand in hand. I think that, you know, some of the other reasons you've seen the lowest number of high school participation rates in the last 30 years. some of those are also affecting high school football. You know, those two go hand in hand, and there's a lot of reasons why there. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We pretty much assume it has to do with concussions, but it's different when you say you have maybe a 15 or 16 year old compared to an 8 or 9 year old that plays youth football. Yeah. I mean, it's the sport of football, but of course both levels are very, very different. And that's going to bring me to my next question for you. I don't want to say there's a disconnect, but I think there is a small disconnect in high school football compared to youth football. A lot of that has to do with high school coaches, and it's a very touchy subject sometimes to talk about with some of the high school coaches, because let's be honest, some of them do not care for youth tackle football. And in some regards, I can agree with them because of some of the coaching that goes on and some other things that happen at the youth level. So I can understand their concern sometimes, but what can we do between both levels of football to help sustain and continue to grow this sport? Do you have any ideas on how we can, like guys at the youth level hearing this or say like, how do I reach out to my high school coach? How do I make that connection and that bond if they don't have one now?
Yeah. Some really great questions. And it's a long discussion. I think we could talk for hours just on this, right?
Yeah.
But I think that it just varies so much in every little pocket of California, all the different communities we have up and down the state. It varies so much. You know, a friend of mine down here in Beaumont, Jeff Steinberg, head coach at Beaumont High School, he recently had, I think, like 150 coaches. And Beaumont, as I think both of you, Ron probably knows a little bit about that area as well, but Steve, we're pretty close to it here in Apple Valley. And it's not like it's this huge metropolis. It's a pretty tiny little area. He had 130, 150 youth football coaches in for a clinic that he put on not too long ago for all his youth coaches. And that's a guy now who's in a, you know, one high school town who wants that town to be successful in football for a long time. His kids are very young, and he is sold out to, I'm going to build this thing from the ground up, you know, the football youth level on up. So you've got some coaches who understand that at the high school level, and they embrace local youth football organizations. And you've got coaches who just despise the local youth football. So, man, it could not be any, I mean, it's all over the map, right? It could not be any different in every locale of California. I know Ron could probably speak to that, you know, where he's at, and could tell us some stories. You know, I mean, Ron's got one of the biggest, best youth football organizations up and down the state. Longevity there he has with those coaches. Obviously, those things are going to pay a lot of dividends. But I think one reason too, I mean, it kind of, one reason we see a disconnect at, when you, I've studied the high school here in Southern California, we have about a 20% changeover every single year, the last 4 years in head coaches. I've been studying the heck out of that and really, and document all of them on my website. And one of the things we're seeing big time now is guys with just 1 or 2 years of coaching experience taking over a whole program, and they're not educated. They haven't been coaches for very long. They're just an easy hire for the high school. Mm-hmm. Those guys don't appreciate tradition in their towns. They don't appreciate traditions in the local youth football programs. They're just putting on a title to have a title. And that is an indictment in some of these areas and some of these head football coaches at the high school level. They don't have the tools to develop those relationships with their local youth football guys. You asked, what can we do? It's, I think, everything the Alliance is doing. It's trying to build bridges. And if there are youth football guys listening to this who are like, man, I've been trying to build a bridge for years with my high school and that hasn't been happening, reach out to me specifically. See if I can try to, you know, or one of you guys can try to be a mediator, because I got a big passion for that to happen up and down our state, because at the end of the day, it's about football. And if we aren't connecting with our youth and with their parents at the high school level, we're hurting ourselves. We're shooting ourselves in the foot. And that's a really unfortunate thing. But I think that it just speaks to a few things at the high school level, the pride and arrogance in some coaches. Okay. And then the just the inexperience of a lot of head coaches that we're getting these days at the high school ranks.
Ron, you definitely can relate to this with the program that you run in Bakersfield at Golden Empire and what Chris is talking about, you know, the turnover rate. I did not realize that that number was that high. Sure. At the high school level. That, to me, that's an eye opener for me. 20% is huge. That is, yep. Look, stability means everything, right? And Ron, I think we have that a lot in youth football, don't we? Just the turnover rate and trying to, you know, a couple years, sure, a guy comes in and you see that too, don't you?
It's, you know, it's tough. I like what you said for sure. Right. Because I can lend a little personal perspective to that. I'm a youth guy. This is what I do every day, but my track's a little different. My first coaching stint was at the junior college level. Then I go high school, then I go youth. So that track is a little different than the traditional journey for coaches, right? Typically you ascend up. But yeah, what I've learned in that process is, and I don't like to use the word blame, but I'm going to go ahead and say this. There's plenty of blame to go around at all sides. You have youth guys who, quite honestly, are holding the job down. Maybe they get to practice with their work boots on and they're trying to hold it down and they don't have time. Maybe I don't want to go talk to a high school coach. And you got some high school coaches or, hey, I'm a head coach. The last thing I get to do is actually coach because I'm a fundraiser. I'm an administrator. I'm holding the glue together, right? And then all of a sudden you realize that there is this unfortunate gap between both sides. There's a misnomer out there that if you wear a high school whistle, and I wore one for a long time, or college whistle, junior college whistle, that you're automatically a smarter coach, you're more advanced, you're a better coach. Let me say right now, that's a misnomer. But I will say this on the other side too, is that it is a long, complicated conversation, because here's the problem. Both sides have to come together for the survival of this sport. With the turnover rate that you're talking about, I've heard this from coaches in the field. We have a huge youth coach that's in play for 5 or 6 years. And we have several high schools where in that 6-year term, they've had 3 different head high school coaches on that campus with, wow, different ideologies, yeah, different programs. And pretty soon you throw your hands up and you're all, how many times am I going to restart? Yeah. Last year, we're in the spread. Now we're running the veer. Now we're going back to the eye, or maybe we're going to be in some version of a Delaware wing. And it becomes that process. And then turnover on the other side, too. You have these youth coaches who come in and, you know, God bless them, because in the youth world, if dads weren't coaching, and I hear this term and it makes me cringe, oh, you got too many daddy coaches. Let me set the record straight. Without daddy coaches, there may not be coaches.
Yep.
Right. And then they coach, they work their 10, 12 hours. They come on, they coach, and then they go home. High school guys are doing this. Some are on campus. Some are part-time, some are walk-ons. There's just a lot of moving parts, but what get lost in the shuffle is that it's supposed to be one team. The survival of the sport now depends on both sides putting all of those meaningless things apart and come together. And this is what I'll say. I said this to a high school coach, a very tenured state championship high school coach in Bakersfield. And he don't mind me saying his name, Coach Paul Gola, but he just won a D1 division title 3 or 4 years ago.
As soon as you said state champion in Bakersfield, that's the name that came to my mind.
Right. So Paul actually, you know, works with one of our feeder programs. We were having this conversation, very sharp guy. And he's like, what do you think about what's going on? I said, well, listen, at the youth level, we see trends first. Yeah. Before your numbers go up or down, we see that trend first. And I said, for the record, in the last 30 years, we've sent you thousands of young athletes. I've yet to have a high school send me one. So if we're going to develop and get you ready, let's get on the same page. So, because there's enough people outside the sport that are trying to tear it down, we need to stay strong within the sport.
Absolutely. When the whole ban on football in California, you know, came February of last year, 2018, and I started reaching out and doing some work on that. It was because a guy who's had some real meat in the game at both the youth football and high school levels reached out to me and said, hey, we're going to need high school guys to jump on board to help support this movement to fight this ban on tackle football, because it's going to affect you guys sooner or later. To me, that was a no-brainer. To some other coaches in Southern California I started reaching out to, they didn't want to spend 1 minute on it. And I'm like, you guys are idiots, because if youth tackle football is banned in California, You think that's not going to affect your program sooner or later? And some of these guys were like, Chris, if you came and looked at the youth tackle football in our area, you'd want to ban it too.
And that's a fair comment in some places. Yeah, that's a fair comment in some places.
Absolutely. And it might be, but it was still like, well, then I still need you on board to help with this thing. I still need you writing a letter.
Be a part of the solution.
Yeah, exactly. That we can take the Sacramento, and some guys are just blindsided, you know, just blinded to what needs to happen. And that's sad to see, but I think it's a really good point you made that both sides have to give and take here. And I just wish that more coaches at the high school level would do some of the things that you know, some of the really good ones get it.
They do.
I mean, let's face a fact, you know, but I know down here too, in Southern California specifically, you've got some guys, you know, at the private schools, they'll go poach any talent. They poach any talent from the youth football programs. And so that's why some of the guys have given up at the public schools, because they're like, look, I'm not going to spend a bunch of my time and energy helping to develop this youth program, because their top 5-6 kids, they're gone. They're not going to come to my school anyway. So it is a heavy, deep conversation, Steve.
Yeah, that's all valid. But here's one thing. You know, for some of those high school guys to say what they said to you about, hey, you know what, if you saw some of the youth football in my backyard, you'd want to ban it too. Well, why couldn't some of the youth guys look up at the high school team and say, hey, you might want to ban that too, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
they do. Well, they do say that. Those things are said.
Because they won't send their kids to those programs.
Exactly. And see, here's where I think the disconnect is. I still have not been able to figure out why there's this perception. And to me, it's a very large perception that just because you're a high school coach or you play high school football, that somehow that's better than youth football. They're still kids. They're still minors, right? They're still kids playing football. And I don't understand where that mentality comes from with these high school guys, because I got to be honest with you. I've had some videos sent to me. I know Ron has seen some videos. And we're not going to call anybody out right now, but we've had some videos sent to us of high school practices where you would think, yep, what on earth are these high school guys doing? This mind frame that, oh yeah, yeah, youth guys, that these guys are horrible. Honestly, I've seen some horrible high school coaches.
And, you know, I think I'm not to defend the high school guys. I'm not doing that. But I think part of it's a trickle down, because when the high school guys, we deal with these college coaches a lot who come on our campuses, and you should see some of these guys. I mean, these guys, and some of them who, you know, they've lost their way. You know, some of them don't make that much money at all, but they wear that coach college polo, and they walk around our campuses thinking their crap don't stink. And, you know, they're very arrogant. Not all. But a lot of them are very arrogant. And I think that trickles down where the high school guys think when they walk around the youth field, they got to kind of act the same way. I don't know. And that's not all of them. I mean, one of my favorite stories ever with a college recruiter is Ed Orgeron, you know, who's now the head coach at LSU. When he was at USC, okay, he calls me. I have no idea how homeboy got my cell phone number. I'm at a little private school in South Orange County with 200 kids. And he calls and says, Chris, I'm going to be in your area. I'm going to stop by. I want to meet you. When can I be there? I said, Coach, we don't have a kid for you right now. We probably won't have a kid for you in the next 10 years.
Wow.
And he goes, you might in year 11. I'm going to come meet you. That dude was a humble, tremendous guy. Here's a head college coach now at the, you know, this was when he was coaching O-line or D-line at USC. But so I'm not saying all the college guys are like that, but a lot of them are. And I think that kind of trickles down, unfortunately. I think, again, you know, it's just some of these high school guys, they just get too arrogant for their britches. And in the long run, I'm sure Ron and you, Steve, you guys can both tell stories of places you want to steer your kids away from certain schools because of how those high school coaches have acted towards your kids.
Clearly. And to put in perspective what you said, I could not agree with you more. And I think it's the trickle down syndrome that you're talking about. And here it is in an easy step process. NFL guys, you're not in college anymore. You're in the pros, sir. college guys. Hey, this is no hairy high school nonsense, right? Yeah. High school guys. Hey, you're not playing youth football here, son. It's that kind of antiquated rhetoric that continues to drive this disconnect, and it does not help. It does not help.
I don't know if I know antiquated rhetoric. That might be two big words I don't understand, Ron, but you're right.
I'm sorry. You're right about that. Sorry about that.
All right. Well, you know, time flies when you're having fun, and we're about to wrap up this edition of the Chain Crew podcast. And you know what, Chris, I'm going to leave you not with a question, but I'm going to leave you with a thank you. And we'll spend the last few minutes here on this, because we would not be on this podcast right now without you. And to me, I've talked with Ron and Joe, who's the president of the California Youth Football Alliance, about this a lot behind the scenes. This experience that we've been on from the Save Youth Football California Coalition, you know, coming into the California Youth Football Alliance has been an experience for me like no other in my life. I mean, I've been doing youth football for almost 18 years. I mean, that experience alone was just beautiful. But this experience over the past almost 2 years now has been incredible. And this, honest to God, would not be possible without you and how you set this all up. I'm just going to thank you from the youth football community in California, because I don't think a lot of people hear your name a lot in this. If they read about it, they might, but it's just incredible how you got that first call going and it's turned into this. And to me, that's really special.
Yeah. I thank you for those kind words, Steve. You know, it's again, I got a call from Mike Wagner just saying, hey, we need some of your influence and you pulling guys together, and man, it was about football, and that's all it was about. And I love the sport, and I, you know, I've told you guys a few times, but from the beginning, I said, this has got to be youth guys leading the way on this thing, not high school guys. Happy to help as I can and pull some guys together and use some resources I have. But you guys, the three of you specifically, I mean, shoot, I think there were 50 people on a phone call that night, and there's three standing, and you know, that's Ron, Steve, and Joe who've really led this thing. So, I'm happy to pass that baton when we did. And I'm really proud of the work that you three men have done. It's awesome. We've got one in Northern California, Central and Southern. And I'll tell you, man, Ron, I'll be honest with you. I know you're trying to wrap up in 2 minutes, but I'm long-winded. Ron, after that conversation, I said, gosh dang, there are some good dudes in this youth football thing. There are some smart men in this who are gonna lead this path, you know, because I was dumbfounded by the numbers that you guys had in your program and just the vision you had. So I know I walked away from that going, all right, this thing's gonna take off, and we're gonna beat these idiots in Sacramento, you know. And if we get enough guys like this up and down the state, we'll be youth football is gonna be in good hands.
Yes, sir.
Chris Four, appreciate you joining us for the very first time. You know we're gonna have you back on. I know your schedule is very tight and it's been hard to get you on, but we appreciate you coming on with us on the Chain Crew podcast today. Everything you've done to help youth football in California, we appreciate it. We appreciate your time today and all your knowledge that you brought to us. This is Steve Famiano along with the infamous one, Ron White, wrapping up this edition of the Chain Crew podcast. We'll see you next time. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on another Chain Crew podcast powered by Atavis. Make sure to send us feedback and show ideas to info@cayfa.org.